Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the Monday edition. Got two great guests for you, two great hours today. Both of those guests are our good friend, Dr. Stacy Trisenkos, theologian and scientist. Dr. Trisenkos, if you are not familiar with the work, is the author of Particles of Faith, among quite a few other things, and she's also a former DuPont chemical researcher, where she tried to figure out photosynthesis. Turns out that's really hard. And this is wild. She's here in the studio with us. Usually we talk to her from her home in Texas, but she's right here in studio. Hello, Stacy Trisenkos.
Hello, Cy. It's so lovely to see you.
It's very nice to have you here in the studio with us.
It's great to be here.
Does it look like
it's
you thought
surreal.
It would look?
It looks like a studio. It looks very lovely and pretty, and I love the background here.
Did you expect that there would be a big thing that says Dirty Mugs on it right in front of you?
No.
You didn't see that coming, did you?
It makes me very glad, because now I know that mug I'm drinking out of is clean.
Yes. I clean them. I'm the one who cleans them all the time. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. As you know, because Dr. Trisenkos is a scientist and theologian, we usually talk about faith and science type issues. Second hour, we're going to devote entirely to kind of open forum for faith and science questions. If you have questions about faith and science, that hour is for you. The first hour, we're going to actually talk about a scientific report newly out that you may well have heard about, reported in the news. It's reported using the phrase, it's reported on using the phrase gay gene. So is that, we'll find out from Dr. Trisenkos if that's a real thing. What did the study find? Should we be concerned about these kinds of studies? Is there a reason for doing this kind of science? Can we justify it? Or is it immoral in itself to be doing this kind of science? 888-318-7884. Those are all questions we'll get to, but you're welcome to bring your questions as well. 888-318-7884. So they did a study looking for what, and how did they go about looking for it?
Okay, so the study was called a large-scale genomic-wide association study, and they were looking for genetic architecture of same-sex sexual behavior.
Okay.
So they're looking for more than the gay gene now. They're looking for all the contributions from a complex variety of genes that make a person more likely to be homosexual.
Okay. So how did they go about doing this? Like, do they take blood from people? What do they do?
Yeah. It's called big data.
Okay.
And the big data comes from, you know, the 23andMe, spit in the test tube, send it off, and they tell you your whole genome and can find people you're related to.
I came back 100% Cro-Magnon. That is not really true. Stacey looks at me like, what?
That's very interesting.
That's very bad. I had a little bit of Neanderthal in there.
Yeah.
So, so you spit in the test tube. They tell you like where your ancestors came from.
Yeah, and they can determine your whole genome, which is, it's very interesting. So what they do, though, when they get this from people is people think they're getting information for themselves, but they're also contributing their information to databanks.
Okay.
And so this study, the genomic-wide association study, compared almost half a million individuals from the UK and the United States. And they were looking for correlations. They look at the genes of all those people, and they look for, are there any genes that are the same? Are there any correlations between the genes of these people?
Okay.
And that way they can identify a possible genetic link to homosexual behavior. The thing is, in this study, though, first of all, when you're comparing 500,000 people's genes, you're going to find correlations anyway. You're going to find things in the genomes that line up.
Okay.
But
is that information, or is that just that's going to happen?
It's just a correlation.
Okay.
You know, it's like two events, two things happening at the same time. There's no causal link.
Oh, okay.
to find it, so like the first genomic-wide association study was done with heart disease. So they took people who they knew had an outcome, that they had heart attacks, which is very easy to measure.
Okay.
And they looked at their genes, and they were able to identify certain gene regions in the DNA that matched up in a lot of those people enough for them to say, okay, you have the genes that make you more susceptible to heart disease.
Oh, okay.
But in this case, there was no heart attack. The end result, or the thing they were looking for, was an answer, one answer on a questionnaire for the people who spit in the test tube. It was, have you ever had even one same-sex sexual encounter?
Okay.
And so, you know, that already makes it very hard to make any causal connections with correlations that you find in the genes just one time. That's a vastly different thing from the person who lives as a homosexual.
Right. I see what you're saying. Like, that question actually doesn't even tell you whether it was voluntary or involuntary.
Right.
It doesn't tell you anything.
Yeah. It's very ambiguous. Yeah. It was very ambiguous how they did the study, my opinion, but I think it's...
So you're looking for then, okay, so we want all the people who have ever had a homosexual experience, mm-hmm. a sexual experience,
yeah.
And then we want to see, do they have any markers that are in common in their genes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And
so what do they find?
They found five correlations. Two of them were in men, three were in women, or I may have that backwards, three in men, two in women. And so then the next thing you look at is like, what do these genes do? When they find the correlations, then is there any causal connection? Do these genes, are they associated with anything that could make a person predisposed to homosexuality?
Yeah.
And so that genetic correlation and causation was actually less than 1% of all the 500,000 people studied. So very, very...
That's low.
Very low.
Yeah.
And so what they said from this is... what do you go? You can go one of two ways. You can say, okay, there's no genetic... contribution to being predisposed to same-sex behavior. They went the other way and said, oh, well, that must mean that homosexual behavior is much more complex genetically than we thought, and we just haven't found all the small contributions to this behavior.
Is that possible? Like, as a scientist, not as a theologian, is that convincing to you, or at least is that compelling that, look, maybe this is just a much more complex biological phenomenon than just find it in the genes?
Yeah, I don't find it satisfying at all. So first of all, they're going to keep doing these studies, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think it would be realistic to expect them to say, oh, yeah, there is no genetic contribution. They're going to keep looking. And frankly, that's fine because of AIDS and things like that. It's good to know who might be predisposed to homosexual behaviors. Maybe can help keep them from getting diseases. So they're going to keep doing the studies. But the way it was set up, hanging it all on this one question on a questionnaire about an ever or never same-sex sexual experience in your life, that makes it very difficult from the beginning. And having that little correlation, I don't really know how. Basically, what I said is, this research gives them a metaphysical whiteboard to write any narrative on they want now.
Yeah,
and that's what happened. The New York Times reported it as, this study proves there's a genetic contribution to same-sex behavior.
And when you read the study, you don't see that.
No.
No. Okay.
And so they conclude that it's much more complex than they thought.
888-318-7884 is the number. We're talking with our good friend, scientist and theologian, Dr. Stacy Trisankos. This hour, we're speaking specifically about this search for the gay gene. We want to know it from a scientific perspective, but also from the perspective of the teaching of the Catholic Church. 888-318-7884. Your call or question is welcome, whether you're Catholic or not. Whether you think you agree with us or not, you're welcome to call 888-31-TRUTH. Okay, so Dr. Trisankos, let me ask put on your other hat for a minute, not your science hat. Are there moral problems with even engaging in this kind of science?
The people from the LGBT community had huge problems with it.
Okay.
Because they felt like, and I think it's a similar concern we would have as Catholics, they said that if you start telling parents that their children are going to be predisposed to homosexuality, then people are going to start discriminating against those individuals before birth, you know, meaning, I guess, they could choose to abort them, kill the kids.
I have to say I share that fear because girls are perfectly good human beings. But when people have information that a mother is carrying a girl, they actually abort girls at a higher rate than boys around the world. And there's hundreds of millions of girls who aren't here because of that marker. Imagine what people would do if they were like, oh, this kid looks like he's got a 10% chance of being gay. Maybe they take the kid out before it's even born.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's something to be concerned about with any kind of genetic testing.
Yeah.
Which is in a bigger way, that's one of the concerns about doing genetic testing in the first place.
Okay.
But of course, you know, that's the kind of bioethical discussion we need to be having. So let's get our heads around this and let's make sure that we help people, even unborn people, and help them to, you know, cure diseases or help them, even if it's being like, you know, we can tell who's predisposed to mental illness. There are genetic contributions to mental illness,
right,
to obesity, even to nail biting, they've thought. So the more we can know about our children, the more we can help them.
Yeah.
But the LGBT community had a problem with it, even for born people who are grown. If someone is known to be genetically predisposed to homosexuality, they were concerned that they would be discriminated against, like in the workplace and
stuff. Oh, right,
right. Not even hired for it.
Right, and a lot of people will think, well, you can't do that. Look, America is 5% of the world's population.
Yeah.
There's people all over this world and places where that would be perfectly legal to discriminate.
Yes.
All right, I have to take a break, but I want to know when we come back, as a Catholic scientist, thinking through the ethics of this, I just want an answer. Did you come down on the side where you said, no, we should not be doing these studies, or actually there are legitimate reasons to do them? But I want you to hold till we come back. You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Dr. Stacy Trisankos is our guest. Our number is 888-318-7884. Back with more of this conversation about the gay gene and also about Catholic teaching about human sexuality and the value of each human being before God. 888-318-7884. Right back after this.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live is proudly supported by CatholicChemistry.com, a new dating site for Catholics who want to do dating right and believe relationships start with Catholic chemistry. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicChemistry.com for their generous support on the web at CatholicChemistry.com.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
Our mission is to transform the world one woman at a time through a spiritual program of formation that helps them to see who they are as daughters of the Most High God and to enjoy the gift that God has given to them by virtue of their femininity.
Women of Grace with Jeanette Bankovic-Williams. Tomorrow morning, 11 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. So happy to have you here with us on this Monday. Hope your Monday is going well. We have Dr. Stacy Trisankos, the author of Particles of Faith. She's an educator. She's a scientist. She's a theologian. And she is also the princess of the rodeo. Is that true? Did I say that right?
I rode in some play days when I was a kid because my dad got me a horse and taught me how to ride the barrels and the poles and things.
Oh, you did that?
I won some trophies.
Oh, all right. you are not here in your capacity as Princess of the Rodeo.
Yeah.
So this big study got a lot of press. Of course it's going to. This is a very of the moment kind of topic. And so they're looking for genetic markers of tendencies towards homosexuality. Mm-hmm. And so my basic bottom line question is this immoral to even do this kind of research? Would you as a Catholic say, no, don't do that?
No, I support the research.
Okay.
And I think it's reasonable to think they're going to do the research because all of the data is being collected. Like if people are spitting in test tubes and sending off to 23andMe,
right,
the data is there and it could help us understand the human person better. But this is where, you know, just to step back even from this issue of same-sex sexual behavior to anything genetically predisposed about the human person, this is really where Catholics need to elbow our way in or do whatever we need to do to get to the table where the decisions are made, the bioethical committees at hospitals, universities, politics, and start guiding this discussion. Because what pervades, and I think this is sad for people who do struggle with homosexuality or who like being homosexual, the sad thing is this attitude in the scientific community is that the human person is just atoms and molecules.
Right.
It does not take into account the human soul. There is no discussion about the human soul because the people who don't study what we talk about as Catholics, body and soul, and right. being responsible for practicing virtue and creation and redemption and all that, they don't know how to talk about the human soul. They don't know how to talk about the human person in terms any other than atoms and molecules doing right. their thing, which is sad for anyone. I mean, that's not all that we are. We are
right.
atoms and molecules, but that's not all that we are.
So you kind of, the fear is you do the science, as you said, you support the science, but you do it in a way that's disconnected from a broader understanding of what the human person is, then you're going to end up hurting people.
Yeah, because, here's where I can speak with some authority, not because of any education I've had, but because the walk I walked in my own life. You know, I was raised in a faithful family, Baptist, but I turned away from my faith when I went to college because I was studying science. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know it was called scientism or materialism or even atheism then. I just stopped dealing with God, mm-hmm. decided that was all nonsense.
You wanted atoms and molecules.
I wanted atoms and molecules because the answers were there. There were so many answers there. So
right.
I lived the life of scientism. And I'm okay. a logical person. I lived it completely to the end, but it took me about 13 years to realize how much that messes you up.
Okay.
It messes your head up.
Because you've cut yourself off from part of yourself.
You don't understand yourself at all.
Uh-huh.
I mean, when you think that you're just atoms and molecules and everybody else out there is just atoms and molecules, and as a chemist, you learn how atoms bond with each other, you tend to approach your relationships very mechanically as well. Well,
oh.
I did this, you should do this.
I see.
And you don't understand these natural longings you have to love and be loved, to know and be known,
right.
to belong to your community and your family. You don't understand that. You don't understand what it means to practice virtue.
Okay, so the study is done then, and you'd say it's okay to have this knowledge. Mm-hmm. We just see evidence of this everywhere. Knowledge is very dangerous if it's disconnected from, you know, morals, things mm-hmm. like morals,
yeah.
things like how a human being should be treated and all of that. So do you expect there will be further studies that will find links, or is this a pretty... has this been pretty firmly established then that no, we're not likely to find genetic markers that are clear genetic markers. This yeah. person is disposed this way.
There will be more studies, and I expect it to be something like this. So they reported, like I said before, 5 regions of DNA that are, and I'm quoting here, significantly associated with same-sex sexual behavior. One of them was a link between olfaction, which is the sense of smell, and reproductive function. There's something called Kallmann syndrome.
Okay.
And it's a condition characterized by delayed or absent puberty accompanied with an impaired sense of smell. So there are children who have, they have a bad sense of smell. They can't smell. And that's also, it's correlated, but there is also a causal link correlated to them having late puberty or not
okay.
puberty at all. And so they're saying there is a link. And so they see correlations with that gene. In some of these studies.
Right.
So I think they'll study that more.
Okay.
They found another link that correlated to behaviors with genes that were known to make a person predisposed to smoking, cigarettes and marijuana both, to risk-taking, and then to an ambiguous trait they called openness to experience.
Oh, come on.
So I don't really know what that means.
If you're going to do science, you have to. That,
yeah.
What is that? Yeah.
But they're going to study this more often.
Yeah.
You know, say you have the gene that makes you more likely to be open to new experiences.
Right.
You're probably going to be checking that box for having one encounter.
I see what you mean. Yeah, right, right. Okay, so let me ask you this then, because there's different ways of talking about nature, and often it seems to me that people will think that biological nature, and this goes back to what you were saying before, but just coming at it from a different angle, biological nature, what frogs do and what atoms do and what, you know, all that, is the same as human nature, that human nature doesn't have any mysterious quality to it other than that kind of nature. So would it, if it can be established there are biological markers for homosexual attractions or tendency towards homosexual attractions even, would that tell us something about the nature of the person that would mean we got to redo some Catholic teaching here because it's not taking into account what people are really naturally like?
Right. It wouldn't, because there are direct parallels all over the place. Like, we know there are genetic contributions to mental health. We can tell if a person is predisposed to mental health conditions like depression, anxiety, or obsessive compulsive disorders. And so we're not rethinking anything as Catholics. But what that means is there's an even greater need to teach people what it means to be a human person, an individual substance with a rational nature, made in the image and likeness of God, with the faculties, the Trinitarian faculties of intellect and free will. I mean, we understand that about ourselves, those spiritual things, intellect and free will, because of understanding the Holy Trinity, which was revealed to us.
Yeah.
And we've got to help people understand that. And we've got to help people understand the virtues, you know, faith, hope, and love, and then prudence, justice, fortitude, and temperance. There's a formula for practicing that in our lives, and you need to know about it. And that was one of the most beautiful things for me when I became Catholic, and I understood that I am not just matter. I'm not just my body. I'm not just an object. I am a human person, body and soul, and I have the ability to think and make good choices.
Right.
And yes, I'm responsible for my sins and I need to confess them, but I'm forgiven. And when I read about the virtues, like I read Joseph Pieper's work and St. Thomas Aquinas's work on practicing virtues, I felt so, like, I hate to use the word, but empowered. I felt like, you know, I know how to figure out who I am now. I know how to make good decisions.
Yes.
I know how to treat people justly. I know how to be courageous. I know how to not have that blueberry muffin when I really want it.
Oh, you could probably teach me that sometime. I've never learned how to not have the blueberry muffin.
I understood I have a self.
And, yes.
And it helped me so much. Like, and that's what people are missing. And the scientific community at large does not consider the human person to be anything more than body.
Yeah. 888-318-7884 is the number. Dr. Stacy Trusankos is our guest. She's a chemist and theologian. And second hour, we'll just open it up to any general questions you might have on faith and science. This hour, we're going to stay with the gay gene. And if you have questions about this study about the gay gene, or if you have questions about the nature of tendencies in one direction or another and what that says about being a human being, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Up first for on the phones this hour is John in Ontario, Canada, listening on Ave Maria Radio. John, your question for Dr. Trusankos.
Hi. One question. The doctor, does she do promos for homeschooling stuff on EWTN?
I have been a big advocate of homeschooling. Like, we homeschooled our kids.
Because your voice sounds similar to some someone else. But that's not why I called, though. I just kind of had an observation. Maybe you already spoke of it, but if you're someone who identifies as homosexual and you had a single heterosexual encounter, would that mean that you're a repressed, heterosexual? Because I think by this business of, you had one homosexual encounter and suddenly that puts you into the homosexual camp.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, is pretty, it's pretty poor logic and poor science.
Well, we're actually trying to label things here that are not that easy to label, are they?
Right. And you're exactly right, John. You're exactly right. And that study was criticized for just that reason. I think their justification was that's where they're going to start. But yeah, there's a huge difference between a person who had, you know, a bad night in college and a person who lives
that's
a
interesting
lifestyle. There's a huge difference between a person who makes a choice to live a certain lifestyle. So it was called the ever or never criteria.
Yeah,
the one,
right.
And that was criticized. I think, in my opinion, and so people would disagree, and that's why I'm saying it's my opinion, but I think that renders the whole study rather useless.
Okay, fair enough. Again, 888-31-TRUTH is our number. Lots of calls, and we're going to get to all of those. Dr. Stacy Trusenkos is our guest. She's the author of Particles of Faith, among other things. Are you making a school edition, a textbook edition of Particles of Faith?
Yes, it was.
Is it already out?
Yeah, it was just out September 13th.
Somebody could have told me that in this. Oh, sorry, Nick. Didn't mean to look at you. All right. We'll talk more about that. And we'll talk about more about the gay gene, about homosexuality in general from the scientific perspective and from the perspective of moral and religious teaching. We'll do that all when we come back with Dr. Stacy Trusenkos right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Everybody's favorite Catholic outer space delivery pilots return for their greatest adventure yet in the brand new graphic novel Weapons of War. Fresh from saving the solar system in The Truth Is Out There and saving the timeline of salvation history in The Big Picture, Brendan and Irk land in a magnificent domed city on Mars for what is supposed to be a simple shuttle job. But soon they find themselves caught up in a sinister assault on faith and freedom. Will Mars be lost to the enemy? Brendan and Irk's only hope for the flight is in the power of God's sacramental gifts. A totally new kind of Catholic resource for apologetics and evangelization, The Truth Is Out There series combines the visual excitement and quirky humor of graphic novels with solid popular philosophy and theology. The result is a series in which everyone from teens to adults can find accessible answers to questions about God, the soul, true happiness, and much more. Order your copy of Weapons of War today by calling 844-239-4952, by visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
If you're a Catholic who sometimes gets intimidated by the Bible, Jimmy Akin's The Bible is a Catholic Book will help you better understand and take pride in this gift that God gave the world through the church. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Catholics are the original Bible Christians. Order your copy of The Bible is a Catholic Book today by calling 844-239-4952, by visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Our guest this hour is Dr. Stacy Trusenkos. She's going to stay with us for the second hour as well, where we'll open up the phones to more general questions about faith and science. If you have faith and science questions, you are welcome to call a second hour with those. If you happen to be a person who is yourself a materialist or rejects this idea that there's more than just atoms and molecules and energy and all that, you're welcome to call a second hour as well. This hour, we're talking about a study that came out, was given to us in the media by the shorthand of a search for the gay gene. We wanted to talk with Dr. Trusenkos about that because she is both a chemist and a theologian, and this has implications on both sides of that. Lots of folks on the line. The number, by the way, we got one line open if you want to get in on the conversation, 888-318-7884. Up next is Denise in Swanson, Ohio, listening on Annunciation Radio. Denise, your question for Dr. Stacy Trusenkos.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great.
So I am asking because I have an adult child who recently, within the last year, announced that they were atheists. and recently married, and married another young person who was atheist. And this particular child of mine has a lot of homosexual friends and practicing homosexuality. Some of them are marrying each other and, you know, adopting children. Some of them are drag queens. So they're knee deep into it, you know? And so I'm trying to figure out, because she argues with me, and I'm not like a highly intellectual type of person, you know. I just kind of go by church teaching and my thoughts and what's in my heart, what I know to be true and good and beautiful. And I don't know how to argue the points with her. And when I say argue, I just mean, you know, discuss it in a civil, adult, intelligent way.
Is there a particular thing that you would like help with, either vis-a-vis the atheism or about what the church is teaching about people who have homosexual tendencies?
Okay, so since the atheism comes into play, mm-hmm. church teaching means nothing to them.
Right. Ah, fair enough. You know, okay, so how do you talk to somebody about these things who is just given up on church teaching?
Yeah, so, you know, I have 7 children, and the youngest one's 8, so we're well into the teen and 20s, and even one of them's 30. And I know what you're talking about, Denise. I've had moments where I felt like the house was burning down, and I couldn't just sit on the front porch swing and just chat, you know, because the child would want me to have a conversation, and I would be freaking out because all these things, you know, you don't believe in God, or mm-hmm. you're making choices that I know are going to hurt you. And so just at a really high level, like, and if you're seeking truth, goodness, and beauty, then you are intellectual. But on a high level, I have learned at this point in my life, and maybe this will help, that one of the strongest things I can do with my children, it gets back to that relationship thing where they're not just atoms and molecules. I can't just check the boxes. Each one of my children is a different human being and a different child. And the only way I'm going to be able to guide those children to practice virtue is to just speak the truth, but not freak out. I now think that those times when I thought the house was burning down and I couldn't just sit on the porch swing and talk to my child, it was Satan trying to convince me the house was burning down.
Oh.
When what my child really needed was for me to connect, and my adult child, you know, to connect. And so I think the strongest thing you can do is try to get to the center of that child as much as you can. Like, I envision, like, trying to get to know the child so well. Listen, talk, answer questions, ask questions, but just keep calm. And the more you can get to know the child and get as close to the center of the child, so to speak, as you can, the better you can look out at the world through that child's eyes. And not just child, but any other person. Josef Pieper calls it the love of friendship. And, you know, he says something that stopped me dead in my tracks when I was reading it as a parent about prudence. How can you get other people to practice prudence? You can't force another person to practice virtue. Mm-hmm. And that got me as a mother, because I would force my children to practice prudence if I could.
Yeah.
But you can. And he says the only way you can lead another person is through the love of friendship, through charity, through taking the time to get to know the child. So where I come back to, Denise, is just keep doing what you're doing. Stay calm. Pray. Don't let the things that the child's doing, the adult child's doing, that makes you hurt or be afraid, don't let that come between you, because I think that's exactly what Satan wants.
Denise, how's that for you?
Very good. Thank you. I mean, I have 7 children as well, and a lot of them have really kind of, you know, went off the reservation a little bit. So I got all kinds of stuff we could talk about.
Fist bump.
But right now, my heart is for this one particular child, because we're going to be visiting them soon. And it's just such a point of contention between us. And it's not me. I don't ever bring the topic up.
Yeah, but just love and connect over other things. Yeah, right.
There's power in saying, you know what, we disagree, but I don't want that to take over our time together. I love you unconditionally no matter what, and I will always love you for who you are. And just wipe it away and then try to, you know, spend time then.
Yeah. Yeah. Denise, thank you very, very much. Dr. Stacy Trisenkos is our guest. We're talking about the new research into what has been called in the media the gay gene. You're welcome to use whatever terminology you'd like. We just want to have a good open conversation with you. Anonymous, you are next. Your question for Dr. Trisenkos.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I was actually really scared. I got into the middle of your conversation, but I found it very interesting. I am, of course, a mother of a gay child. Actually came out as an adult. And I just was wondering, is this something that is inherited, like the gene? Because honestly, on the maternal side of you know, my husband's, my mother, mother-in-law on her side, there happens to be lots in that family that are gay or lesbian.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Even, you know, my in-laws and stuff, they have children of their own that are gay or lesbian.
Yeah. And so the reason they did this study using all the genetic data from the 23andMe data bank is because there were studies published a few decades ago that talk about an inherited predisposition to being homosexual. They called it the twin study. So, like, they studied identical twins. And they could even tell, like, cousins and things, that they, just like with mental illness or obesity, they've long thought, that's where the gay gene thing first came from, they've long thought that there was some kind of inheritance to this behavior. But let's get the language correct. So the correct way to say it is a person, and I've said it already several times, you might be genetically predisposed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the most we could ever say about genetics. You might be genetically predisposed. There are genetic conditions that would predispose you to heart disease. There are genetic conditions that would predispose you, like I've said, to obesity. And so if you know those things, that's good. You can use it.
And there's also things that are like non-disease things that are just neutral that you could probably find markers for as well. You'd have a tendency towards this or that. But how those tendencies are expressed, you have a choice in is.
Yeah. And that's where it's so important to understand for any of the people you're talking to, the importance of being body and soul and practicing virtue. You do have choices. We're not slaves to our biology. I mean, if we are mentally predisposed, like if you're a woman and they tell you, you have the genetic markers that predispose you, there is a condition where you don't ever feel full. And so you want to eat because you're genuinely hungry.
Do men have that too?
And I don't know. But if you know you have that genetic predisposition, then that gives you more data, so to speak.
That's a tool you can use.
That you can say, I know this about myself and I need to not have that second blueberry muffin today. Like it empowers you to know. And so that is that. And if you know that, if you ever they come up with the complex architecture of homosexuality in a genetic sense, the most we'll ever be able to say is that you are genetically predisposed. And it might help us if you have a child that suffers. Because I do think some people, some people are born that way and they don't understand why they have these feelings. And especially considering how dangerous HIV and AIDS are, if you know there's a genetic predisposition, then you can help the person more. But what you have to do is help the person make good choices.
Okay, Anonymous.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much. We got to take a quick break. Dr. Stacy Trisenkos is our guest. There are a bunch of people on the phone. I'm going to get to you all as quickly as I can when we come back. Right now, I just want to remind you that we're going to be in Omaha on November 2nd. You can find out all about how you can participate in the Spirit Catholic Radio / Catholic Answers Conference November 2nd there in Omaha. Just go to spiritcatholicradio.com, spiritcatholicradio.com, and find out all about it. Also, we're going to be in Sydney this weekend. Carlo will be there. Chris Check, our president, will be there. I'll be there. Tim Staples will be there. We've got a great big Catholic conference that we're doing with Perugia Media. If you just put in Catholic Answers Sydney, you'll get all the information that you want. And we'd love to see you there. It's open to anybody. It's free. Come on out. We're going to have a ball. And we're going to talk all kinds of good Catholic stuff. And I hope you will leave inspired and educated the education will come from others than myself. I'll try to do the inspiring. But we'd love to see you in Sydney. Then the week after that, we'll be in Perth. Just look for Evangelization Australia, and we'll see you all in Perth for another big Catholic conference. And we got some stops along the way. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Dr. Stacey Drasenkos and our conversation about the genetic inheritability of a tendency towards homosexual attractions right after this.
We're glad you're with us. Stick around for more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features daily Mass, prayers, articles, and meditations in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church. On the web at Magnificat.com.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
I just want to share that 5 years ago, my lovely warrior princess and saint of a wife and I decided to adopt a little girl through foster care. She is the perfect roundout of our family of three boys and her. Yes, there are challenges. Very grateful today for all the blessings that he has shown our family.
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
Welcome back. Dr. Stacey Drasenkos, our guest this hour. She's got a book. It's called Particles of Faith. You wrote a book on the philosopher and historian of science. I hope I'm saying that right. Father Stanley Yockey.
Mm-hmm.
Is he philosopher and historian of science? Would that be the
and
way to say it?
And a physicist. He had a PhD in physics.
And his crazy notion was that Christianity contributed to in a vital, even essential way to the birth of science.
Yes. Absolutely. We're talking about correlation and causation. He showed a correlation that that modern science, the scientific revolution, happened in the Christian West. And he showed even more so it happened for a reason. It wasn't just an accident. It happened because of our worldview, that the world is created and ordered.
It's almost like science is born of Christianity.
That's exactly right. Yep. This title of the book.
All right, Lou in Upstate. We'll talk more about all that science and faith stuff next hour. And so get your calls ready. If you disagree with that premise, if you think that the Catholic Middle Ages, for example, held science back, you're welcome to call second hour. This hour we're talking about the idea of the gay gene. And Lou in Upstate New York is next. Lou is listening on the Station of the Cross. Lou, your question for Dr. Stacey Drasenkos.
Hi. The reading that I did said that homosexuality had less to do with a gay gene and more to do with the environment in the womb as the child was developing. For instance, stressed mothers have a different hormonal environment in which the baby develops. And I think the correlation was that the more stressed a mother is, during her pregnancy, the higher the probability that that child may have some homosexual tendencies later in life, which supports that it's the environment in the womb and the environment that the child develops in after it's born.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, there are a lot of people psychologically that are homosexual, not because of genetics, but because of some sort of abuse from a member of the family. And so they develop an identity to bond with what they think is safe or what they think is missing from their life.
All right. This is a variety of possible other explanations having to do with early life trauma or what happens from the hormones in the in the womb.
Yep.
Any of this compelling to you or of interest to you?
It's all been studied. I mean, there's even something called the older brother effect, that, you know, there's a correlation between the fraternal birth order and male sexual orientation. It's been suggested by researchers that, you know, the more older brothers a man has from the same mother, the greater the probability is that he will have a homosexual orientation. So there's all kinds of ways that people look at, you know, what causes it. I think it's fine to study any of that, but like I was saying, I don't think there's ever a reason to say, aha, we've proved it. It's always going to be, you know, so what if there's a genetic predisposition? There's still the rest of the story, which is all the things that you were mentioning, plus how you're raised, life experiences, a bunch of things. I mean, every single person is unique. And it's again, you know, sad that we're trying to reduce the person to just the body. But one thing I did want to read that relates to what you just said, in the New York Times, so I was watching the popular media and how this was reported in the secular world. Like, the New York Times wrote about this, and they say, and they quoted a geneticist at MIT and Harvard. They say, it's written into our genes, and it's part of our environment. This is part of our species, and it's part of who we are. So they're already going way beyond what a sensible, cautious approach to the science would call for.
That sounds like somebody who wants you to believe a worldview rather than somebody who wants to tell you, here's what science is showing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, Lou, thanks very much. There are lots of folks on the line, so I'm going to keep going. Scott in Converse, Texas, listening on KGMA. You are up next. Scott, your question for Dr. Stacy Drasenkos.
Yes, the question I had is, the doctor had mentioned about intellect and free will, and I was just wondering, what is the interplay in her mind between intellect, free will, and the genetic predisposition to whatever tendency one has? In other words, where does the buck stop? What responsibility? And I know that's a hard one to guess, but that would be the question I have.
I see. So, yeah. So you can say you are an intelligent, you're a reasonable and responsible creature by nature. That's what God made you. But you might have tendencies to do things that would mitigate your own moral responsibility. I suppose that could be for, say, alcohol consumption or something like that. So what would you
it's
make
a good
of
point.
In regard to our sexuality? Might some people have predispositions that actually mitigate their responsibility?
Yeah. I mean, if you're an adolescent and you're told that you're predisposed to overwhelming anxiety, then you learn how to practice calming techniques so that you'll be more in control of yourself. And I mean, even if we found, you know, and I think this is way more likely what happens sometimes, if you told a married man who felt an attraction to another woman that that's just in his genes, it doesn't matter. It's not going to fly. Yeah. You can't just say, oh, well, you're genetically predispositioned to adultery, so go for it.
Yeah.
You're just made that way. No, what do we say? We say that's no explanation and that's no excuse for the sin of adultery, and you can't give into it. What you've got to do, and this is where the virtue of temperance comes in, which depends on fortitude, justice, and prudence, which depend on faith, hope, and love. It all fits together. You say to that person, you've got to practice virtue and make good choices. You have to fight your own, you know, your own sinful nature sometimes, or you have to fight the things that you're inclined to do.
And we all have that.
We all have it.
There's nobody other than maybe two people,
right.
who's never been tempted or even had an inclination towards some kind of sin, whether it's stealing or drinking or
we all
being
have to
mean
do
to
that.
People or yeah,
we all have to do it. I mean, we don't get off just because of our genes. And so the whole way to look at all of this kind of research is getting back to, you know, it's harming people to teach them that they're just a body.
This is just how you are.
Yeah.
Go with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's much more empowering to say that you are made. I mean, St. Thomas Aquinas uses the word power, the power to be fully human. You're made to practice virtue. And when you can practice virtue, you become a better and better person. We're journeying towards perfection in life.
Scott, I'm going to leave it there because, as I said, there are lots of folks on the line. Up next is Todd in Omaha, Nebraska, listening in on the Great Spirit Catholic Radio. Todd, first of all, will we possibly see you November 2nd at the conference?
It's possible.
I hope we do. So go ahead, your question for Dr. Drasenkos.
Yeah. Well, good evening, guys. My question is kind of like Lou's a couple of calls ago, in relation to how the homosexuality kind of plays into the family and maybe any dysfunction there. What he says makes a lot of sense. There could be some issues with the father, not bonding with them properly, and the mother being overly domineering. So I just wanted to know if you have anything to add with that.
I think, well, speaking as a mother and, you know, just as a woman, yeah, I think there is a lot to do there. And let me just think how to say it. When I learned after converting about what it means to have a human soul and to practice virtue, when I learned that the rational soul made in the image and likeness of God means that we have this desire to think and will, that we have these desires to belong to our communities and our families, and we have this desire to both love and the reciprocal be loved and to know and be known. Like, I want people to know who I am when I'm in a relationship with someone, my friends. I want them to know me and I want to know them. When I realized we're made that way, I mean, that's how we're made. We're born to love and be loved, to know and be known. And anytime it's broken in a family, which there's lots of that, anytime that's broken, it breaks the person. I mean, something gets very fundamentally messed up in a young soul of a child who doesn't have that unconditional love from mom and dad from the very beginning. And it's, you know, we talk a lot about divorce and the trauma that causes for children. It's even get more fundamental than divorce. It's this lack of love and this lack of people who want to know you. It breaks my heart to think, because I have known children who didn't know if anybody in the world loved them or not, and didn't know if anybody even thought it was good that they existed, didn't even want to know about them. And that breaks a poor soul. That breaks the child's soul. When the child grows up, the child has problem forming relationships. And, you know, fortunately, my parents loved me unconditionally from day one, and I found my way back into the church and back to Christ. I think that had a lot to do with it. And yeah. I worry about the children who grow up in broken homes like that.
Thanks, Todd. Moving on, as I said, trying to get as many as I can in before the top of the hour. Up next is Doug in Cincinnati, Ohio, listening on Sacred Heart Radio. Doug, your question for Dr. Stacy Drasenkos.
Yes, Dr. Stacy. I was curious if you've heard of the studies where they're showing that at exits from like water treatment plants, that there's a lot of pharmaceuticals and especially, you know, the hormones and that out of contraceptives that are starting to affect fish, where the male fish are exhibiting, you know, female characteristics in that. And is there, I wonder if there's any studies that are saying, is that possibly starting to affect us as humans?
Okay, so contraceptives in the water. Is it possible that all these contraceptives are changing human sexuality?
I think it's possible, but I haven't studied that enough to really say much about it. I think that's possible, but I don't know. Good enough?
Yeah, I don't know is a good answer.
Definitely, yeah, okay. So, I mean, it's definitely possible, but how you nail that down is difficult. But yeah, contraceptives in the water are not doing anybody any good. Contraceptives in the body are not doing anybody any good.
Yeah, if I could, though, because we're social creatures, we kind of learn who we are we do absolutely learn who we are in a social context.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a poisonous society as well. I mean, you were talking before about the child, and it is heartbreaking, who doesn't know whether they're loved or whether anyone ever wants to know them or know about them. He's talking about there's chemicals in the water and there's chemical. I mean, I don't want to be a chemophobe talking to a chemist right now, but there are these things. But there's also the fact that television, movies, internet, there's a poisonous aspect to the society that also may affect people's behavior. If I'll just throw that out there. I want to see what your view of that is.
Absolutely. I mean, I read something from Pope Benedict XVI in his little book, In the Beginning. It's about creation and evolution.
Right.
But in that book, he talks about original sin and what it actually looks like for us. And he says that original sin is the breaking of relationships. So the Holy Trinity is perfect circumintercession between all, you know, the three persons. They're completely united. But for us, we're made in the image and likeness of God, and we are never going to have perfect relationships. A child is born into the world with broken relationships already all around him or her. And as you grow up in that, it's something to be aware of. But what Pope Benedict XVI also said was the way to re-heal those broken relationships is to unite yourself to Christ. Your Creator is also your Redeemer. And so you have to be guided towards that.
Doug, thank you very much for that call. Thanks, everybody. Dr. Trisenkos will be here with us for another hour. So if you're on the line and you still have a question you'd like to ask her, you're welcome to do that. But we're also going to open the phones up to a more general conversation about faith and science. Whether you are a person who believes there's a conflict between faith and science, or you'd just like to know more about the relationship, from the Catholic perspective, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Right back with Dr. Trisenkos.